This podcast is brought to you by the RNIB Older People and Complex Needs Team, RNIB ECLO Team, and RNIB iHealth Team. It is part of our Vision and Stroke series. The information in this podcast will be helpful for health and social care professionals and anyone who wants to know more about vision and stroke.
Hello and welcome to RNIB's Vision and Stroke podcast series. I'm Lindsay Sansom from the Older People and Complex Needs Team, and today I'll be talking to Sandra, who's going to be talking about her experience of how her stroke had impacted on her vision. As we mentioned in the previous podcast, stroke can affect everyone differently, and from a professional point of view, it is good to learn from other professionals' experience and also from stroke survivors themselves to know more about the impact that stroke can have on someone's lives and what we can do to help. So as we mentioned previously, stroke can sometimes have an impact on vision, and this can be in a number of ways. And I'm delighted that Sandra's joined us today to share how her stroke has had an impact on her vision. So Sandra, would you mind telling everyone just a little bit about your experience of how your stroke impacted on your vision?
It was a vision almost completely. I didn't have a loss of power of any to any extent at one side, and I didn't have slurred speech. It was the fact that my vision had gone.
Yes, as you say, some of the more common signs of stroke are that maybe weakness down one side of the body or slurred speech or not able to lift arms, things like that. But it's your vision that was actually affected.
I had zigzag and flashing lights, which were a sign that I was having a stroke, but I didn't realise that. I thought I was having, I don't know, a migraine headache or something like that. And it was only when it was combined with the sort of inability to balance that I realised that there was something wrong. And ultimately, it was diagnosed the next morning as a stroke. So all the symptoms were in fact visual, which I think is quite unusual, but there might have been some visual symptoms that other people have that perhaps are outweighed by the fact that they've got the other symptoms of loss of power in an arm and so on.
Sandra, you mentioned there some of your symptoms of your stroke being some visual changes, like you mentioned there seeing zigzags and flashing lights in your vision, and that these are unusual for stroke, like you mentioned. So it's just to note that if someone does see zigzags or flashing lights in their vision, that this could mean many different things, and it's always important to get these symptoms checked out by an eye care professional. And how were those visual changes assessed or picked up?
Well, my recollection is that they weren't picked up fast, because the kind of test as to whether you could see actually didn't check whether you could see to the side without moving your head. My recollection, and this is 15 years ago, and I wasn't quite sure what was happening, was that I realised that I was walking past things without seeing them on the left-hand side. And I was fortunate that I was in hospital in stroke unit and rehab and so on, that I was able to be whittled down to the assessment, orthoptic
department. Yeah.
And at that point, they realised just how much of a massive impairment that the stroke had made to my ability to see to the side.
So you had other symptoms as well, Sandra, and then vision was one of those symptoms?
Not really. No. I didn't have other symptoms particularly, apart from the fact that my balance, and that's something also that is partly to do, I think, with your visual clues. My balance wasn't good, but I was able to walk unaided quite quickly, as long as I kept going and didn't try to stop. And I never had any weakness either in speech or in general power.
So that's really interesting. Stroke can affect so many people in different mm-hmm. ways, can't it? Yeah. So that's interesting that it was those visual symptoms as well. So you'd mentioned there you had the assessment done for those visual difficulties that you were having because you noticed mm-hmm. that you were missing things to one side.
Uh-huh. Huge thing to one side, like big rooms and whatnot, you know. And I actually, with hindsight, realised that I had probably driven that day, the day that I had the stroke, with the signs of this already, because I had driven past a road that I should have turned left at and hadn't seen it. But I just thought I wasn't paying attention and I'd forgot, you know. But although, as I say, I think mine was extreme, but I would say that in the hospital, in the rehab, I could see that there were people with strokes who had perhaps a less extreme version, who weren't seeing to the side. And it meant that they were perhaps spilling things at whatever side they couldn't see, because they would make a gesture not realising that there was a glass there of milk or something like that. Not normally tea, but mine was to the left-hand side. So normally people would put teas and cups to your right, but other liquids they would put to your left. So that I saw people, you know, at the round tables, perhaps, that I could kind of deduce had that kind of difficulty as well. But they just thought they were being careless.
Yes, so it's easy to put it down to another reason, yeah. Like you're saying, Sandra, so sometimes it possibly could be missed.
I think so, yeah.
And hopefully with podcasts like this, it can help raise awareness. Potentially somebody may have a visual problem after their stroke.
Uh-huh.
And it's important to, yeah, for us all to be aware of that, and then to know if somebody's supporting somebody who has had a stroke, what can they then do to help their day-to-day life, really. What sort of support did you receive, Sandra?
Well, the building up of strategies to cope with the fact I was told that it wouldn't come back. At first, you keep thinking, but if it's not back by very quickly, then it's not likely that it's the pathway is ever going to be repaired. But all my support at that point was to develop strategies in order not to do things like walk into fire extinguishers. They were on the corridor to that side. I learned, for example, to sight along where I was going, to stay to one side, you know, of in railway stations and in airports, for example. If people rush past you at that side, they think you can see them, but you can't. So all the help I was given really was just working out how do you cope with the fact that you're not actually going to be able to see to that side. Loads of people have only got sight in one eye, so it should be absolutely fine. You've lost the ability for both eyes. You know, one eye can't compensate.
And did you find that you were speaking there about the strategies to help adapt to that, not being able to see to that side? Did you find that took you quite a long time to adapt to that, Sandra?
Yeah, I was better at the beginning, because at the beginning you're terribly aware of it. Later, you forget, you become careless, and you also get embarrassed. Like, it's much better if somebody that I'm walking along the road with is at my right-hand side, because otherwise they're a disembodied voice. If somebody goes to that side, you've got to not be embarrassed enough to say, would you mind coming to that side? You know, and it's the same if you sit down at a dinner table to, you know, position yourself so that you get the maximum, you can see as many people as possible. Because I did find that if I move, I couldn't cope with biggish groups, because if I kept moving my head, I got a wee bit dizzy, you know, in order to see the person that was out of vision. So as I say, in many respects at the beginning, you were so much more careful. Whereas now I would be capable of walking into the branches of a tree just because I had forgotten to double check that they weren't going to be jutting out, you know, like brambles and things.
Yeah, so lots of things I'm sure that you found you had to, you know, adapt to and get used to in different environments, like you're saying, whether that's outside and the areas that you're walking, or whether it's indoors and new environments, or even in your own home. I'm sure there would be many things in your own home that you found you were having to possibly adapt to as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm careless, so I've got to be awfully careful not to leave a cupboard door open, because I might not see it. That kind of thing. It's things at that level. Yeah, but you do get much, much better at it. But I'd say the danger is carelessness, and in crowded situations, it's still a wee bit scary, because folk won't realise that you can't see their trolley or whatever it is that they're whizzing past you. So you're capable of taking a step to the side that you can't see to.
So some people may find, like you're saying, crowded environments, they could possibly feel quite scared within that type of environment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's all about how people could adapt or cope with that. And do you find that it's helpful if you speak to family or friends and tell them what you're able to see?
Yes, without boring folk about it, I think you've just not to be embarrassed, you know, to say, would you mind if I change over, you know? And it's quite interesting because I have one sister who doesn't hear so well to one side, and we discovered that in actual fact, that's absolutely right. If she stands to my right, I can see her and she can hear me, whereas if we do it the other way around.
What's your best side to be standing at? Yes. Yeah. I'm sure that can be, have a huge impact for how people can best communicate with each other, like you're saying. That's really good points to mention there as well, that even just standing in a certain position could make a huge difference for someone.
It makes a great difference, yes. And I think the business of looking where you're going to see if there are any potential hazards is the other thing that, you know, perhaps we should be aware of for people, you know, and carers and so on, the people with the strokes themselves. Get staff to see. I was fortunate to have a stroke when I was quite young, but you know, if you have somebody who's elderly, and I am elderly now, but if you've got somebody that's elderly, then it's good if they've got carers in support who recognise that this is an additional reason for reassuring them.
Yes, and as you say, good for anyone supporting someone who's maybe had a stroke to be aware of particular issues around about their vision and to know their sort of visual needs as well as all their other needs.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
So if someone's listening to this podcast who has maybe had a stroke and their vision has been impacted, what would you say to them as someone who's been in their shoes?
I think that there are ways to cope. They're, you know, very positive, that it is something that you can learn to live with, and you can learn to live well with it compared to some situations of other people, you know. In fact, I suppose with all visual impairment, you'll know more than I do, but either you can learn to live a positive, happy, fruitful life, whether or not you have it. It's just that you have to work out what your particular areas of weakness or danger are and do something to overcome them. I have to go out now and get public transport because I can no longer drive. And I loved driving before, and I did a lot of it, but I was warned very early on that, you know, I would never get a driving license, although ironically I could actually sit in a car and pass the test for the driving license because I can see perfectly well straight ahead, you know, but I would be a danger on the road. So it's right that I don't have a license, but it does mean that you have to, you know, start coping with buses and trains and whatnot again.
Sounds like you've adapted to it really, really well, Sandra, and as you said, made certain changes, and some changes may be bigger than others, but adapted to all those changes well. But for people to know as well that there is support out there, and if they do notice any changes in their vision at all, to speak to their local optometrist or to speak to any professionals involved in their care, so they're referred on and their eyes and vision can be assessed. And any treatment or any coping strategies can be then given for that person. So that's really good to know. If a health or social care worker is listening to your experiences today, and they may be thinking, what could we do to help if someone we're supporting has vision effects from their stroke? Would there be any sort of key things that you would want to mention from a stroke survivor point of view, Sandra?
Yeah, I think help with the idea of hazards in a sensitive way, because people can get quite curmudgeonly about I don't need help and all the rest of it. But I think just to be aware of simple things like I observed distress in the hospital when we were all sitting around with folk perhaps spilling things. And one of the reasons was that it was a white table, white cups, white milk in it. And there were actually people at that table who couldn't see that. And then they spilt it and then they felt distressed. So that maybe they're being alert. If there are ever times when it looks as if the person hasn't been able to cope, looking that little bit further and seeing, well, is there a visual element to this? Is it that they're not actually seeing it rather than they're not registering it mentally? So if it's within the home and outside, perhaps, again, just aiding people to discover their own coping strategies with things that perhaps they're less confident about.
as you mentioned, some people may not be able to say that their vision's been affected or have mm-hmm. that understanding that their vision's been affected. So if that mm-hmm. can be picked up by somebody who's supporting them or a other health professional, mm-hmm. if any possible visual changes can be picked up and then properly assessed, mm-hmm. yeah. then somebody can have the best uh-huh. treatment yeah. or strategies put in place uh-huh. so they probably can get the most from their vision.
It just occurred to me there, something as simple as making sure that you go for your regular eye test, where at least there is a kind of peripheral vision test that's part of it. It's not both. There's a different one if you're getting assessed for driving. But just to make sure that people who have had a stroke keep on their regular appointments, I think might actually be important too, because yes. it might be something you would think, well, I don't need to go and get my eyesight tested because I'm staying in and I've got my glasses and that type of thing.
Yes, as you say, so important to keep going to your routine eye examinations, and in that way any changes could be picked up mm-hmm. and potentially saving any further sight loss uh-huh, as well.
Yes, uh-huh. yep. The only thing is, I think people who have had a stroke whose speech have been affected, for example, it might be quite hard for them to actually articulate. And that's something that I suppose support needs to be given to make sure that you get the actual data that's needed.
Yes, and that's when it's really good if anyone knows that person well or supports that person, can uh-huh. go along with them and can let the optometrist know if there are any problems that that person's having, can let the optician mm-hmm. know so their eyes can be properly assessed. Mm-hmm. And it's good for everyone to know that anyone can have an eye examination and you don't have to be able to read an eye chart for your vision to be assessed and your eye health mm-hmm. check to be done. So anyone at all can access eye tests as well.
Well, you've told me something I didn't know that.
Oh,
I didn't
well.
know that you didn't need to be able to, you know. So I mean, again, that's maybe something that's worthwhile, you know, putting out there to folk that have got, you know, that might be more embarrassed to.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's it. Eye tests can be for everyone. Yep. So you don't need to mm-hmm. be able to read the letter chart like mm-hmm. we mentioned. So yes, Sandra, is there anything else that you want to mention that we've maybe not covered already?
I don't think so, actually. No. I think that was, I've been happy to talk, and this has been an experience.
Yeah. Is there any, was there any particular, just something that came into my mind there, Sandra, was there anything in particular within your own home that you changed or adapted to because of that you weren't able to see to that one side?
I don't think so. I mean, I put in additional ability to buzz people in. I haven't really adapted, you know, anything particularly. Did put in some red tape on cupboard, insides of cupboard doors and things at the side that I couldn't see to. And one of my little great nieces, she went round putting danger signs on things that I might trip over and whatnot. No, it was major things like I decided I couldn't bend over and put a gas fire on. So I had it just taken out and changed the fireplace to an electric one and so on, just because. But these were more about my balance rather than my sight.
Well, thank you so much, Sandra, for your time today and sharing all your experiences. And it sounds like you've had a lot to sort of adapt to and cope with. And mm-hmm. we really appreciate you sharing your story today. And hopefully this will help raise awareness of how stroke can sometimes impact on someone's vision. But there is support out there and available that people can access. So thank you very much, Sandra.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, Lindsay.
If you found this helpful, listen to our other podcasts in our Vision and Stroke series. We also have information and support online relating to vision and stroke on the RNIB web pages. You can find this information by typing stroke into the search bar at the top right-hand side of the RNIB webpage, www.rnib.org.uk. For more information about working with people with sight loss and complex needs, go onto the RNIB website, type complex needs in the search box. You can also call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999. Thank you for listening.